The views you are about to hear are the personal views of Kira Lawrence and her guests. They are not necessarily views that are shared by the organisations to which Kira is associated.
You're listening to Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
So, hi everybody. Welcome to the next episode of Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod. Delighted to be joined by a lovely guest who is the radio and TV broadcaster and DJ Lee Spencer. Welcome to my podcast.
Thank you so much. What a lovely introduction that was. It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Thank you for saying yes to being a lovely, lovely guest. So let's get chatting, because I know you're a very busy lady.
Well, I've got two little children and they definitely keep me very busy. That's true.
Yes, I've been seeing you be very busy being away this week. So I know you're very busy with your career and your family and everything. So yes, let's get chatting away. So I've read your biography. And you are a TV and radio broadcaster who is best known for your award-winning shows on Kiss FM. So what I'd like to ask you is, please tell me and my listeners about you, about your life, about your career. So over to you.
Sure. So I started off my career in radio a number of years ago now. I actually always knew that I wanted to do some kind of presenting. I was really into public speaking and things like that when I was young. And Kiss FM was actually my dream station. And so I was really keen to get my foot in the door there. And it took me a number of years. I worked at lots of small stations making cups of tea and being really helpful until somebody finally gave me a big opportunity. And I started on Kiss FM daytime in 2006.
Okay.
So I had a very long career there. I started doing the lunchtime show, which was from 1 o'clock till three. And then I did that for about 6 years. And I was also presenting at the weekend. And then I moved to a different slot, which was quite a famous show called the Kistry Show.
Okay.
And lots of people love Kistry because it's that music that reminds you of your favorite memories.
Yeah.
So it was a very popular show. It was full of shout outs and requests, and it was a really fun show to present. And I had a long career doing that particular show as well. And I've been really, really lucky because I found a job that I loved. And I think that that's quite rare in life, you know?
Yeah.
My dad, because I'm Indian, my dad really wanted me to be a dentist.
Okay.
But I was never very good with needles or teeth or anything like that. I could never have been a doctor or a dentist. So I went for a completely different kind of career, and it was a lot of fun. So aside from doing my daily radio show, I used to DJ in a lot of nightclubs. So I would go all across the country playing Kistry to big audiences, and I'd go abroad as well. So, yeah, I had a lot of fun doing that whole radio thing for a long time.
Brilliant. And I wanted to ask you, like, what has the last year been for you personally, like, over the last year? Like, what's life been like for you over the last year? Has it been easy? Has it been hard? Has it been a challenge? Like, what's the last year and a half been like for you?
That's such a good question. Well, I actually have been, I've been finding it really unusual. I think that's the best word to describe it. I'm used to doing radio and DJing and running around, and instead I've been doing really nothing apart from being a mum. So my job, much like many people's careers, was actually affected by the pandemic. So there were no live shows for me. Yeah. And I would normally do about 30 live shows a year. And wow. I did two. Okay. So financially, it was a really difficult year. Yeah. I also had actually left my radio position just before the pandemic because I had my second child.
Okay.
So I left to have my second child thinking, oh, yeah, I'll go back in a few months when I'm ready. And then the pandemic hit.
Right.
So it was a really different time for me. It was kind of like, I'm usually a career woman.
Yeah.
I take real joy out of my work and broadcasting. And instead, I was just a mum. And initially, Kira, it was quite an adjustment. It was quite an adjustment. And then I started to focus on the really positive things about it, like that I got to be with my children.
Yeah.
And how amazing that was. Like, when would I ever get to have this time with my children again?
Yeah.
And I was actually very lucky because my younger brother, he's special needs.
Okay.
But I got to spend so much time with him. So my younger brother has severe learning difficulties and special needs.
Right.
And he, much like so many of these wonderful, wonderful individuals in our lives, had to try and navigate through the pandemic. And it was really hard for him because normally he's out and about. He goes to his, you know, he goes to MenCap events.
Yeah.
He goes away. He sees his friends. And my mum is his full-time carer.
Yeah.
So even for my mum, it was really, really full on. Because she wasn't getting any respite.
Yeah.
And normally Wokingham, that's our district council, they are brilliant. Normally Wokingham would send them to Butlins. And they'd go on day trips.
Yeah.
But instead, we were all inside, weren't we? We were just at home.
Yeah.
So I formed a support bubble with him. And so very early on in the pandemic, because I knew my mum needed my support and my brother.
Yeah.
My children and my younger brother and my mum, we created a bubble. And I then did all the shopping for my mum. And the little girls, my children, got to just lift my little brother's spirits because suddenly he had something to do.
Yeah.
He had some routine because he knew that the girls were doing this at this point of the day and then this was happening. And I really think we were really blessed because we got each other through it.
Okay.
Yeah. So we were very lucky in a way that we had that unit.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was sent home from work one day last March because one of my colleagues was at home with the symptoms of like COVID. So I was sent home out of safety, just kind of just in case, because I sit very near them at work. And I was like, oh, bye, see you tomorrow. I'll be back tomorrow. See you, bye. And like, you know, thought nothing of it. And then, of course, that turned into 2 months, and then that turned into 3 months, and then that turned into half a year. And so then by this point, I was then furloughed by MenCap, and I was furloughed for like 3 months, which meant I had to be at home. I couldn't do my job legally for that amount of time. I was still being paid, which I was very grateful for, like, I'm very grateful for that. But it was really hard because I've been working for MenCap now for 19 years. And it's not just a job to me. That's my career. That's all I've ever known. MenCap is my family. MenCap is my life. And having a learning disability, that was really hard for me. So I was like, well, what do I do now? Where do I go? Who's going to support me? Who's going to be there to help me understand the rules? And my husband, Mark, bless his heart, he literally became my husband, my support worker, my champion, my everything, because obviously during the rules period, my mum, who normally supports me and gives me help with things in my flat, she couldn't come into my flat. So Mark had to really step up over the last year and help me with everything that I needed support with. And actually, now we are stronger. We've become much stronger together as a couple because he's had to step up a little bit more. And actually, it was lovely. Like now, my mum, she still supports me with some things, but actually now Mark is able to kind of help me with more stuff at home, which is actually really lovely. But it had been very, very difficult the first few months. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know where I'm allowed to go. I don't know who I'm allowed to see. I don't know what I'm allowed to do. And it was really hard. And then finally, in end of June last year, Mencap invited me back. So I was like, yay, I'm going back to work. This is so exciting. Yay. And I've now been back at work for just over a year. So like, wow. I'm very grateful. I'm so lucky. Whereas I know so many people haven't had that, you know, positive time. And, you know, to be back doing what I love, to be back lobbying for people with a learning disability and speaking up for those people like me has been amazing. It's given me my voice back. It's given me my confidence back. It's given me a real sense of every day now I have something that I love doing, and I do it every day now. So, yeah, and I know you are one of our Mencap ambassadors, which is amazing.
Yes, absolutely. It's such an incredible organisation. I've been there a couple of times, and I did a little DJ workshop there a number of years ago. But I'm so grateful for everything that Mencap does. And in the pandemic, I was actually initially really shocked to find out that people with learning difficulties were so low on the list for the vaccine.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it, because we know that they're so much more at risk. And I then started to campaign a little bit on my social media and just said, you know, these are the facts and the figures, the alarming, devastating facts and figures. We need these incredibly beautiful, wonderful people to be prioritized. And, you know, I always say that special for me, special needs, the word special, it just sums up everything about my brother and people who have the same, you know, conditions as him. Is they are honestly just the most, you know, sort of kind-hearted, genuine, you know, salt of the earth, lovely people, and they're special, and we need to look after them. And I was really angry and a little upset when I knew what the reality was. And I saw in my own household, my little brother, every single day. And I think a lot of people with special needs were doing this. They were really sort of obsessed with watching the news and watching the Prime Minister's briefings. And my younger brother, Amandeep, would say to me, I'm just waiting for the Prime Minister to say this is all over. He wanted to hear those words. And he, for a long time, he was then wanting to hear, we've got a vaccine. So when he hears all this news about the vaccine had happened, like we found a vaccine, it works, he was so elated that he thought, this is it. I'm going to get to go out now. And actually, he had to wait so long. But in the end, because of Mencap's hard work and your hard work and the little bit of work that I did and everyone else, we got them prioritised.
Yeah.
And they got up there on the list.
Yeah.
And I just will never forget how excited he was to have an injection. He is never normally excited about having an injection.
I know. Same as me. I was like, I don't normally like these. but I'm going. I don't yes. care what it costs me. I don't care what I have to do. I'm going. And actually, I hate needles. Anyone who knows me knows I will cry a GP surgery down because of an injection. But actually, it was okay. And my husband was there to as my supporter, and he distracted me and talked to me through it. And by the time he stopped talking to me, it'd been done. And I was like, I didn't even notice. And like, for me, that was a reasonable adjustment for him to be there talking to me and supporting me. And I've had both now. I'm double jabbed now. So yeah.
Yay. So pleased. So yeah. happy. How did you meet your husband?
So we...
This is a funny story.
Yes. So in 1996, so years ago... So actually 15 years ago, I left my special needs school, and my special needs school, all the support I had there stopped when I left. So my parents had to find me a local college to go to, like for my next step of my career. And so I ended up going to Guildford, which is a fantastic college in Surrey. And I walked in first day, went into the student canteen with my best friend, because my best friend went to Guildford as well. So we started together, and we were sitting in the student canteen, and I saw him across the room, and I was like, he's really cute. He's really nice. I like him. And he reminded me a little bit of Nick Carter from the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah.
Mark had like blonde hair, like curtain look, like hairstyle, blue eyes. And like, I was a massive fan of Backstreet Boys. Like I had a huge crush on Nick Carter because like he had blonde hair and blue eyes. And so when I saw Mark, I was like, he's really nice. So I went and chatted him up and basically reeled him in. And then that was it. We've been together ever since 1996. We've been married now 8 years. So yeah, we've been together for 15, 16 years now.
That is absolutely incredible. What a wonderful story. I love that. And that's so nice. I'm so glad that you talk about him with such happiness. You can't stop smiling when you talk about him. That's such a lovely thing.
He's such a lovely guy. Now, he doesn't have a learning disability, but when he met me, he said, I see you as a person. I'm not going to see learning disability. And, you know, all the years we've been together, I've always said, I don't want you to treat me like I'm stupid. I don't want you to talk to me like I'm stupid. Yeah. I want us to have a relationship like any other partner. And sometimes, yes, he has to help me speak up, and sometimes he has to help me understand like letters and stuff. But that's him being my husband. It isn't him being patronizing. It's not him being making me feel stupid. And I'm very lucky, and his family are wonderful to me. Like, they've taken me in over the years, and I absolutely love them, and they treat me like any daughter-in-law they have, and they've got other daughters-in-law. They don't treat me any differently. They treat me the same as them, and they're wonderful. So I'm very blessed.
That's so incredible. And as it should be, as it should be.
Yeah.
But you were clearly destined to have this blessing in your life, and you were meant to find each other that day. And that's just such a wonderful story. Such a wonderful story. And it warms my heart.
So now I've got three nephews. So we've got three nephews. We've got two nieces together. So we don't have our own children. We haven't had children, but they're like our children, and we spoil them rotten. We go out with them, we have fun with them, and then we hand them back.
That's it. That's what you want. You want to be able to do that so you can then hand them back. I love that. That's the best type of parenting.
Definitely. So in your biography, it said that you were the first Asian woman to cross over into mainstream radio. That must have felt like a huge achievement to be like the first Asian woman to cross over. How did that feel for you?
Well, actually, even more than that, I was the first British Asian of any kind. Like, the fact that I was a woman is just even more mind-blowing in a way.
Yeah.
But I was the first British Asian in the country to ever get a mainstream commercial radio show.
Yeah.
And at the time, I actually didn't even really think about it. I think about it much more now. Mm. When I see that there's such a welcome wave of diversity inclusion, I'm like, yeah, wow, it's taken everyone a long time to keep up with the wave that I started 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Because I thought me getting that position would then ripple out to a lot of other people just like me getting those positions. And they really haven't. So now, in the last year or so, this new welcomed wave of diversity and inclusion is absolutely brilliant. When I first started in my career, only Asian stations wanted to employ me.
Right.
And I had to make the decision to just get experience and put my dreams to one side, knowing that I was every single thing I did at every station I worked at, even if it was just me making tea and watching, was really valuable. So luckily, I had the insight to know that it wasn't about getting the biggest job straight away.
Yeah.
It was work your way up. And I did exactly that. So by the time I got to KISS, I think the reason that I got that show on KISS FM, such a big show, was because I had already really put my time in. You know, I had really worked across all these different types of radio stations and shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was ready. I was ready to prove myself. And I think the main thing I love about that particular statement is that people that listened to me never knew that I was, whether I was Asian or not. And I like that because I think it shouldn't be, that's what it should be. It should be that I'm British Asian. So yes, I sound British because I was born here.
Mm.
And yes, I'm very proud of my Indian heritage. Mm. I am. I'm Sikh. Mm. My parents are Sikhs. Mm. I'm so proud of my religion. We give back and we do so much charitable work. We're very kind people, very peaceful religion.
Yeah.
But at the same time, on the radio, you'll hear me talking about things that aren't stereotypically Asian, as it goes, you know, quote unquote, stereotypical Asian. Yeah. And I think that that's really important because I don't think it's fair for anyone to ever be pigeonholed.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair for anyone to ever be stereotyped or be hired just because people are ticking a box. It should be on your merit. It should be on what you give. And in the same way that I would love to see far more inclusion for people with special needs.
I was going to ask.
Yes, I would absolutely. I mean, for me, when my little brother was growing up, I always knew that we'd have to look after him forever. I always knew he'd never be able to live alone. And I knew that he would need us to assist with his care. And I had that knowledge very early on in my teens because that's when I found out he was unwell and what his condition entailed. Mm. And at the time, it dawned on me then, you know, what will he do with his life? What will his life look like when he's older?
Mm.
And I know he's so into music and he loves movies.
Yeah.
And I always hoped that he could have a job. But unfortunately, the only jobs that have ever really come his way are collecting bins, doing the trolleys in supermarkets.
Yeah.
And that's kind of about it. And the thing is, not to put those jobs down. They're so needed. And we need those jobs.
Yeah.
And we commend anybody that does those jobs because those are hard jobs.
Yeah.
Essentially, there's so much more that he could do.
Yeah.
It's just people don't understand his ability. Yeah. They just look at his disability.
Yeah.
So they just read him and go, oh, you're clearly disabled. There's something going on here. We don't understand it. Bye. instead of going, wow, your memory is like the a superhero's memory. And he, you know, he can remember numbers and figures and, you know, coding, and there's so much more that he could give. Mm. And so what I'd love to do, and maybe it's something that we get to do a little bit of together, I want to find a way to help more people with special needs get better, you know, work positions in their life. I would love to see someone with special needs get work experience in great places like radio stations, and exciting places. I don't think my little brother's work experience was at Bernardo's,
right?
And it was again, Bernardo's is an incredible charity, and I think the fact that they don't judge is really important. But the only thing that he was allowed to do was he had to stay in the back of the shop.
Okay.
Stay in the back of the shop just sorting out some of the clothes. He wasn't allowed to come to the front of the shop, engage with customers. And I think it was because I think here people are there because they don't understand people with special needs. They're quite they're a little fearful.
Yes. Yeah.
And they're a bit like, ooh, I don't know. I don't know what to do. Ooh. And and it's actually such a shame because I've spent my whole life around people with special needs, and they just are, as I was saying before, they're the most joyful people. And I actually think that they are an incredible example to society. You know, they're such good, driven people who want to be positive and do well. And I think if they were out in the world more, and if they were allowed to be out in the world more, they'd be spreading the joy that they bring. And so I hope one day that there are more opportunities for them, and that they can really integrate better into society.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, that's going to be one of the things that we're going to look at as part of our brand new MenCap 5-year big plan that's on the list. So, yes, we want to crack employment because, as we know, only 6% of people with a learning disability known to their local authority are in paid employment full time. And that's... Wow. That to me is shocking. It's shockingly low. Yeah.
Whoa, that's so low.
So we are going to do some work around employment to try and crack that as part of our 5-year big plan going forward. So watch this space. So hopefully you'll be able to get involved at some point, which would be great. And
I would love to. Maybe I can try and facilitate having some people do some lovely special needs at a radio station or something fun when they can come in and, you know, really do something that really, you know, ignites a bit of passion in them and they feel excited that they get to be part of something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be on board to help you with that.
Amazing.
I'll come and see you at the offices.
Amazing. And I think also, you know, having Joe Wiley as one of our ambassadors, I would love to see more DJs with a learning disability presenting shows on radio too. Why not? I think that would be incredible. Like, I really hope that happens at some point. You know, and I think because I've been in MenCap 19 years and I've built my career, I got promoted this year, which was huge achievement. Thank you.
Well done.
I'm now also on our brand new leadership team at MenCap. So I'm now a leader. So, you know, I've gone from being a part-time office assistant 19 years ago to being a leader, working on our big plan, working campaigns team, working in press team, working in fundraising. I've literally been across MenCap now. And as a person with a learning disability, what I wanted to do is have a way of telling the public about learning disability and about what we can do and achieve. And this is why I started my podcast, because in lockdown, sadly, a lot of the activities I used to go to in the evening, I used to go to club nights for adults with learning disabilities, and yes, which I absolutely loved.
Yes.
And they all stopped. So I had nothing in the evening to do during lockdown. So I watched Michelle Obama's podcast online one night.
Wow.
And I said to my mum, I want to start my own podcast. So we looked into it and I bought myself a microphone. So I got a Natty microphone set and set up a Zoom account. And so now I'm on episode 18. So yeah, I've done 18 episodes so far. I've interviewed people like Krishnan Gurumurthy from Channel 4. I've interviewed Baroness Tanya Gray Thompson. I've interviewed Anna Kennedy OBE. I've interviewed Samantha Janus, Samantha Womack Sam Janus. And she was lovely, really, really nice. And actually, I'm going to go and see her next week at Wimbledon Theatre because she's playing Morticia Adams in the Adams Family Musical, and it's at Wimbledon next week. So I'm going to go as her guest to go and see her in it and meet her. So I'm very excited.
Fantastic. That's so amazing. How fun is that?
Yeah, I'm a huge musical theatre fan. So it's really lovely during my podcast chat with her. We actually started singing songs from musicals together, and it was really lovely. So she's like, oh, you must come and see me as Morticia in Wimbledon. I was like, I am so there. Like, I will come and see you. So yeah, it's next week. So it's very exciting now.
I'm so excited for you. That's wonderful.
So, and also hopefully off the back of it, I'm now going to also go and see the musical Hairspray, because Rita Simons, who was Roxy in EastEnders with her, she's in it with Michael Ball. So hopefully I'm now also going to go see Hairspray and meet Rita, hopefully, as well. So, yeah.
Oh, that is so amazing. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to try and find something cool to invite you to then, won't I, so that I keep up the side.
Yes.
I'll have to think. Maybe one of my DJ gigs, you never know, when they pick up again.
That would be amazing. Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, like I'm I am a party a good girl.
One. Yeah, I can tell. So that's a good idea. Then I'll try and find an appropriate one that I think would be really nice for you.
Perfect. No, I look forward to it. So also, I was going to also ask you, so during your career, I read that in 2018, you hosted backstage at Music for Mental Health, interviewing celebrities such as Ed Sheeran, Ella Eyre, and Ollie Mers. And you also chaired a debate on youth violence at Google's London HQ, with HRH, the Prince of Wales. So please, can you tell me a little bit about that and what you did?
Absolutely. So at Music for Mental Health, I actually hosted all of the backstage interviews.
Okay.
So I was basically speaking to all the talent who were performing. So we had Ed Sheeran, Ollie Mers, Ella Eyre, James, can't remember James's surname now, he was on X Factor, but we had a whole host of celebrities there, and I was in charge of speaking to them and having conversations with them backstage about mental health.
Okay.
So having really sort of really honest conversations about mental health. And I really enjoyed doing that because I never really got to do that on my radio show. I had to just play the music and seem really happy and just talk about very uplifting things.
Yeah.
But actually, sometimes it's really important to talk about the things that we struggle with.
Yeah.
And so I was very happy to have those really deep, very honest conversations with those various people at that show. And in terms of what was going on with His Royal Highness, I've been a Prince's Trust ambassador for a really long time.
Okay.
And the Prince's Trust had invited me to come and basically host this conversation with Prince Charles at Google. And again, it was a really incredible thing to be asked to do. And because I think I've worked with the royal family so many times, I was able to know how to navigate that conversation and be able to do it live, which obviously takes a lot. I think that was a really exciting thing to be asked to do. And I've just been really fortunate because any presenting that I've done always seems to be something that has a lot of meaning behind it.
Yeah.
And I've become somebody who really takes pride in the fact that I want to try and make a difference with the platform that I have.
Yeah.
I won Influencer of the Year at the Parenting Baby Awards.
Wow.
And I was really proud of it because I feel like the word influencer, I think we've lost a lot of its meaning.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people on social media now have been given these huge platforms. And I think in some ways that's great what they do. If they want to sell various products to people, that's cool. But I just think there is so much more to life. And what I think is, if you're given an opportunity to use your talent or your platform, it has to be for something really good.
Yeah.
But I think the reason I think that way is probably because I've been blessed with having a younger brother with special needs.
Yeah.
So I look at life differently to other people, as anyone does, who, like your husband would. Your husband would see you as the biggest joy of his life, and he wouldn't change anything about you.
Yeah.
And that is when you know that you understand, you know, humanity on a different level. And the older I get, and now I'm a mum, I've become just a really deep person, I'm really trying to do a lot of good.
Yeah.
And so I'm fortunate that people are coming to me to say, oh, can you present this thing, Niamh? And can you present this thing?
Yeah.
And it's great because for me, if I'm doing something that I know has a real impact, then I feel proud, you know?
Yeah, definitely. What I would love to do, my goal, is to be the first person with a learning disability be a contestant on Strictly Come Dancing. I would love to do Strictly, and I've already set up my campaign online.
Wow.
And I would love to do it.
Great.
So
you would be absolutely phenomenal. You would be phenomenal. And yeah, well, I will make sure that I push that campaign and follow it as well. And I just think you would be so great. So you never know, next year, you know, keep that in your mind, because I think you would be just, you'd be fab.
Because last year I had a conversation with June Sarpong and a couple of the diversity people at the BBC. And what they said to me was, A, you're not a celebrity at the moment. You're not at that level. Yes, you have a career and you're well known in your field, but you're not technically a celebrity, and you need to grow your social media, you need to grow your platform. So I'm kind of using my platform and my podcast as a person with a learning disability to kind of sort of say, look, I'm here. I would love to be on Strictly and be the first person with a learning disability, because at the moment they have Paralympians. That's great. They have other people with disabilities on Strictly. That's great. But they have never, ever, ever on Strictly had a contestant with a learning disability. I want to be that person. So I'm really hoping, if I grow my podcast from this time now to next year, I'm hoping they'll ask me. So yeah, watch this space.
I am absolutely hoping they do. I just think you'd be fab, and I think you're doing everything the right way.
Yeah.
And what you just need to do is just keep being you, keep spreading the joy that you're spreading, the sparkles, the pink sparkles, you spread that. And I think it's only a matter of time. And, you know, I'm very interested to hear how you get that. And yeah, I just wish you so much luck, because I would vote for you every week.
Thank you. Well,
I would vote for you all the time. I'd be like, go Kira, go Kira.
Yes. So So I've got a hashtag, which is Kira for Strictly. So that's the hashtag.
Okay, fine. Noted.
Right.
Noted.
I will let you go. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.